Now tell me something, Mr. Police Spokesman, tell me something.
The security certificate process cannot be fully understood without being situated within the global war on terror. Mary Foster, a member of the Coalition for Justice for Adil Sharkawi, discusses how the five men in detention are used by the Canadian government to prove to the United States that it is dedicated to anti-terrorism.
You should have seen your Babylon, how them really run away. You should have seen your Babylon, them. Pick up that gear, pick up that gear, pick up that gear. It is no mystery.
This security certificate thing was actually introduced in Canada in the early 90s. And so, as you can see, it predates the official launch of the War of Terror. However, it has been used slightly more frequently since then, and I think it's being used. It's like a tool that's been put to use to show that Canada is very serious about this fight against terrorism, of course, always within the terms set out by the elites in Canada and U.S. for what terrorism looks like. So that's, I think, in a nutshell, how it relates to the broader thing. It's being, I think, the five guys who are locked up are Canada's sort of star terrorists, if you like. they're the thing that Canada can point to when they go down to the States and say, we're really serious about this. We've got five people locked up who, you know, are definitely terrorists, kind of thing. So that's, I mean, not that I think they're definitely terrorists, but that's how they're being used and portrayed. So I think the timing of one of the arrests was shortly before the Minister of Foreign Affairs at that time was going down for a meeting in Washington. Sharkawi was arrested. So it was something that it seems quite obvious was linked to that meeting in a very direct political way. I think that's how it's being used. The media are picking up these cases and using them to increase people's fear about terrorists living beside us, Muslim and Arab terrorists living beside us, among us. The security certificate is being used to help create that climate of fear and hysteria around so-called national security.
Captivity. So every nation march to the beat of progress. Every people are styling up to mirror the West. Who land in their fashions and new pair runways. A foreign invasion coming to change our ways. So we close tight the shutters and turn on the TV.
Ruk Tassé is the coordinator of the International Civil Liberties Monitor Group, a coalition of 32 Canadian organizations. He speaks about Canadian policies of deep integration with the U.S. in terms of border security and anti-terrorist legislation, and tells about the detentions and deportations that happened in the United States after 9/11. He also explains what it means to render someone to torture.
The International Civil Liberties Monitoring Group is a pan-Canadian coalition that was set up after the adoption of Canada's anti-terrorism legislation, Bill C-36. It's a coalition made up of 32 national organizations who were very concerned with the impacts of the anti-terrorism laws on civil liberties, human rights, refugees, immigrants, international development agencies. And so these organizations came together to monitor the impacts of the laws, the application of the laws, to do lobby and advocacy with the government. So we've been involved in doing representation at various parliamentary committees, monitoring the impacts of all the laws, doing public education, political representation. Members include the Canadian Labour Council, Rights and Democracy, Development and Peace, La Ligue des Droits et Libertés here in Montreal, and the Canadian Arab Federation. And so 32 organizations of that stature across Canada created the coalition. After September 11, Canada was under great pressure from the Americans to secure the borders of North America. And Canada basically had an obsession with keeping the borders open between Canada and the U.S. for trade purposes, very understandably so. I would say this was a major driver of the Canadian agenda to appease the pressures from the Americans. So as a result, we've seen an increase, for instance, in the use of security certificates to detain certain individuals. I guess Canada, to some extent, had to show that it was doing its part in the war on terrorism. We knew that thousands of people were detained after September 11. None of them were actually accused of terrorism. Then there was a registration process for all Muslim men between a certain age under a program called SNEER. 13,000 of those people who voluntarily registered were deported from the United States as a result of in good faith showing up and saying, here we are. We are reporting back to the government to see we are here. We want to legitimize our stay in the United States. And 13,000 were detained and deported. Rendition, it's a mechanism by which, and it's practiced mainly by the United States, whereby certain people are being detained, often picked up outside their own countries, as the case of Maher Arar here in Canada, who was picked up by American authorities on his way back from a trip to the Middle East. He was coming back to Montreal, was detained in the United States and in New York specifically. The U.S. wanted to deport him, but because Canada was not in the Canadian Security Agency, the RCMP, it appears that we're finding out this out through the Arar Commission. It appears that the RCMP was not able to give guarantees to the Americans that they would detain him in Canada if he was deported back to Canada. So they decided to deport, to send him illegally to Syria, where he was tortured. So rendition is the practice of taking people, sending them illegally to third countries, basically disappearing people, sending them to those countries where torture is used to interrogate them. Basically, it's contracting out torture to third countries because it's illegal to do it in the United States or in Canada or in most civilized countries. Till now, the respect of human rights, international covenants, and international agreements that Canada is party of are the basis for the rule of law. It's a basic principle of Western democracies. If we continue those practices, we're really changing forever the nature of democratic values that are behind those international agreements. Nothing, according to international law, can violate human rights. And with this practice of rendition, this is exactly what we're doing. We're violating the agreements that Canada has signed internationally.
Deport them. It's a favorite tune of the FBI. Drop I and I on the wrong side of the Sinai. Deport them. It's a favorite tune of the FBI. Cubans don't get dropped in Cuba, but it's a hot destination for Muslims of every nation. It's a hot destination for Muslims of every nation. Only burns, no suntans. It's no holiday in Guantanamo Bay.
The following is an excerpt from a talk given by Roch Tassé on anti-terrorist legislation and the immediate and serious threat it poses to many civil liberties that we take for granted as Canadians.
I believe there are three converging agendas behind all these anti-terrorism measures. The first one being the U.S. imperial design under the guise of the war on terrorism. With this war on terrorism, the U.S. had now redeployed its military presence and reopened military bases in areas where they had been closed down. In the Philippines, for instance, now they're extending their presence in Southeast Asia, the ex-USSR satellite countries, in the oil region of the Caspian Sea and the Middle East. The second driver behind the agenda is probably the eagerness of security and government agencies to use the war on terror as a convenient paradigm to promote their own agenda in this post-Cold War context and within the context of globalization as well. This security agenda for the police and security forces is twofold. First, it's to increase their investigative and surveillance powers of security forces while diminishing the obligation for civilian scrutiny and public accountability. Their second agenda is to tap into the possibilities and the potential of new information technology for purposes of surveillance, data gathering, information sharing, and profiling. All of this for purposes that are not restricted to terrorism, but to facilitate regular police work. And also the third driver behind this global agenda is the corporate interest of the high-tech industry, information technology industry. The war on terror has provided a second life to this industry that had been deflated with the fall of the stock market in the late 90s. So 2001 was really a gold mine for them to reinvest in research and development and market their products. Billions of dollars are dedicated to to research and development of this technology within the context of the war on terrorism. In the US alone, $30 billion spent on research and development for technology in 2004-2005 alone. And the U.S. is planning to spend between $130 and $180 billion a year from now on until 2010 to develop and implement this technology. In Canada, this translates with an investment of $7.7 billion in this year. In Canada, these factors are compounded by an obsession to keep our border open with the U.S. for trade purposes. That's the main driver with regards to Canada. Many measures have been adopted in that context by Canada. Some of them are legislative measures, laws. We are also seeing the rapid and very insidious harmonization of other security measures in the context of non-legislated bilateral agreement and memorandum of understanding with the United States, such as the Smart Border Agreement or the Third Safe Country Agreement. C-36, the Anti-Terrorism Act, C-36 amends 20 other laws in Canada, including the Criminal Code, the Canada Evidence Act, the Security of Information Act, and the Charities Registration Act. The new law grants police expanded investigative and surveillance powers. It allows for preventative detention and investigative hearings. It undermines the principle of due process by guarding certain information of national interest from disclosure during courtroom or other judicial proceedings. It allows for individuals and organizations suspected of terrorist links to be placed on a list and then subjected to very severe measures as a consequence. It also calls for the deregistration of charities accused of links with terrorist organizations. And all of these changes occur on the basis of a very vague, imprecise, and overly expansive definition of terrorist activity. It's also noteworthy that C-36 contains several provisions for the issuance of security certificates and secret trials. These are features that have been borrowed from the Citizen and Immigration Act. They existed in the Immigration Act prior to the event of September 11, and these measures were taken as a model and incorporated into the Anti-Terrorism Act. The Bill C-7, the Public Safety Act, adopted last April-May, was passed in the Senate at the end of April or May this year. This is another very complex omnibus bill. It amends over 20 laws. It contains provisions for the collection and sharing of personal information between airlines, CSIS, RCMP, other police forces, and various government agencies, as well as with foreign governments, for purposes that go way beyond air safety and national security. These provisions aim to facilitate, again, the regular work of police forces to build up data banks in the United States, and that's an all other discussion, the whole phenomenon of the accumulation of data that are being centralized and controlled by, in this case, mainly by the United States. In many ways, C-7 was a piece of legislation to facilitate the implementation of the Smart Border Agreement signed between Canada and the United States. The Smart Border Agreement was not subject to any political discussion. There were no debates in Parliament. It was an executive agreement between Canada and the United States under the radar of the political process. The Smart Border Agreement calls for the increased coordination of information sharing between Canadian and U.S. police and intelligence services. It calls for the harmonization of our refugee, immigration, and security policies. There are 32 points in that agreement, but essentially, it really enhances the collaboration between Immigration Canada and the Immigration Services in the United States, joint border patrols, joint intelligence security units with FBI agents working with CSIS in Canada and the RCMP, and vice versa in the United States. There's another bill that was adopted in November 2001, Bill S-23, which gave access to Canada Customs to all information from airline and travel agencies and the right to constitute data banks on travelers. And that information can be shared quite widely within Canada and now more and more with the United States through other agreements. There's also Bill C-44, which was adopted in December 2001. C-44 amended the Aeronautic Act and the Canada's privacy laws to authorize Canadian air carriers to provide information on passengers to competent authorities in foreign states, in brackets the United States, who have imposed that condition on all countries in the world now. There's more legislation to come. We've read in newspapers that Canada is preparing to establish a no-fly list. That would be a list of individuals who would be prohibited from flying. based on criteria that are not transparent, that we know nothing about. We don't know on what basis these people would be considered a threat and therefore not able to fly. What we do know is that such a no-fly list has existed for the past two or three years in the United States. It's been applied against people in the anti-war movement last year, who were forbidden from flying to attend meetings or demonstrations against the war. It's been used for same purposes in Europe to prevent people attending globalization meetings or meetings of G20 and G8 and various globalization summits. So Canada is building up that no-fly list at the moment. There's also a very strong possibility that in the coming months we will see legislation for lawful access. The lawful access means legislation that would grant police and security services access to information in the hands of internet service providers. It would force internet service providers to have technology where they can retain information on all the contents of your emails or even hard copy records of all the web pages you visit. This is a battle that's coming up for people who are serious about preserving civil liberties. We will have to fight this battle in coming months because I'm pretty sure the Parliament will be looking at such legislation. There's been the introduction of ID cards for landed immigrants and permanent residents with biometric characteristics. There will be the introduction of biometric passports in 2005. So taken as a whole, these measures confer to the police and security agencies investigative powers, law enforcement tools, and a level of discretion never imagined before in Canada outside the War Measures Act. And even then, the War Measures Act was a very temporary measure with a sunset clause for good reason. In the case of all these laws, there is no such thing as a sunset clause. And there are so many laws affected by this legislation, it would be so difficult to untangle them all and go back that we're probably facing a new reality that profoundly alter our legal system and the values entrenched in the Canadian Charter of Rights, such as the right to a fair trial, the right to a full and complete defense, the right to remain silent, the right to privacy, the right to seek asylum, and the right to legitimate political dissent. They're all part of an irreversible and incremental process that will alter forever the relationship between the state and its citizens in Canada.
An Easterner Song by Ihab Lotfi. Am I behind these bars, or is the world? In my captivity, I may be a bird that flies across the sky, or maybe I'm a sword in conscientious people's hearts, a call to all to ask the sun to rise again. Come, come share my bonds with me for just a day. Come, and I promise, if I can promise anyone in any way, I wouldn't make you stay. Am I behind these bars, or is it you? Come and you'll see. Come touch my hand. Come touch my hand, then go. You'll never feel the same again. You'll never be as free.
Family members and supporters of the Secret Trial 5 have faced a daunting task as they confront the incredible power and ambiguity of Canadian institutions of law and immigration. Mary Foster gives her opinion as to whether they have made headway in their challenge to the security certificate process.
I think we've succeeded in knitting together a network around this issue and connecting with people who are working more generally against the push towards fascism. I congratulate us that no one else has been arrested under security certificate for 15 months. Before that, we were seeing a sort of once every 6 months. That's, I'm not sure whether to attribute that to us or not, but it is encouraging nevertheless. Headway in terms of getting the men released and ensuring that they're not deported. I think we're going to see in the next few months where our efforts have led us. It's very difficult politically. It's very hard for Canada to let these people go. The United States is not going to like it. The elements of the Canadian government who are pushing for this public safety agenda and for so-called anti-terrorist measures are not going to like it, and they're going to fight very hard to keep these people from being released, including CSIS. So there's a lot to overcome, and we'll see, I think, in the next few months, because the three guys in Toronto are up for deportation very soon. We'll see how successful our work has been at that point. Very much encourage people to get involved. I think there are a few campaigns as important as this one in Canada right now. We're pushing directly against, we're confronting directly the push towards fascism. And I think it's very important to stand up against that fearlessly and expose it for what it is. So please go to our website, which is www.adilinfo.org. That's ADILINFO.org. They can also email us at justiceforadil, spelled the same way, ADIL, all together, at riseup.net, justiceforadil@riseup.net.
If you are hungry, I will make some bread for you.
Sophie Harkat is the wife of detainee Mohammed Harkat. She has been constantly campaigning against security certificates since her husband's detention in 2002. She speaks about the radical changes in their lives and in her outlook on the world and on Canada. She tells how this ordeal has been a kind of call to action in her life.
Everything all right for you. But if the key don't work, you can knock on the door. The key don't work, you can knock on the door.
My husband spent a whole year in solitary confinement where he didn't have any access to reading materials for the first couple of weeks, did not brush his teeth for the first 2 weeks, did not go outside very often, just a couple of times in the year. I mean, he lived in a very small cell and was in his cell 24 hours a day and could only come out for 2 showers a week. Now the situation has changed. He's now sharing a section with 32 inmates, which of whom are all criminals and who have committed quite serious crimes. So you can understand, I do fear for his life every day, because this guy has no charge and he's mixed in with population that has committed serious crimes. It's really hard to describe how my life has been since December. I mean, every aspect of it has been affected by it. Financially, it's been extremely difficult. I've paid over $40,000 in legal fees, and we haven't gone through the trial yet, the $20-something thousand dollars for the expenses for the campaign. So I've had to put a lot of money out of my own pocket to travel around to give conferences on the subject of security certificates, because my mission is to have the security certificate abolished, that there is no longer any secret trials in Canada. We also have a big committee here in Ottawa who are working around the clock to raise the level of awareness around security certificates. There's so much to say about how people's lives have been affected. As a Canadian, I didn't think that things like that are happening in my own country. I mean, you think this is a democratic country, but we realize it is not a democratic country at all. My husband has lost all of his human rights. He has not access to basic justice. Basically, he's not treated like a human being. Animals in pounds are treated better than individuals held under security certificates, especially considering the conditions that these people are being detained under. Like I've listed a few things earlier, but, you know, you're putting an innocent person amongst criminals, and he's got to learn to survive. And for me, it's a very, very scary thing to know that my husband's mixed in with people who know the system. And so I find my husband has changed. I mean, he's gotten himself used to the system. For me, it's a very scary thing to see. It's been hard on every single aspect, money-wise, health-wise. My health has deteriorated since then. You live constantly under stress because whatever happens in the media, whatever else happens anywhere else in the world, it affects your case. It affects the way, the process. It affects everything. I mean, we've done so many things, like selling our home. We're presently selling our home, making sure that we live somewhere else where I have better access to jail and stuff like that. I never go on holidays because I never want to be away from my husband for too long. We have expenses related to collect calls from jail. I mean, people think that they're just calling locally, but in fact, you're being charged on your bill every time he calls. I mean, it's everything. I mean, my relationships with everybody, I've lost a lot of good friends, but I've gained so many more through supporters. I've become a very different person, and my husband has become a totally different person. Once we're both reunited, we will be a totally different couple. We are much stronger than we thought we were. I'm very impressed by the way my husband's going through this. He still has a sense of humor. He still has faith in the Kenyan government. I can't say that I have the same faith, but he really believes one day we will be reunited, and so do I. But, I mean, everything. I mean, I can't think of everything that I've changed, but, I mean, it's been a very, very, very rough ride. It's been a ride from hell, I should say. My whole perspective, as well as my family's on Canada, has changed. It's unfortunate to say that this is supposed to be a democratic country, but it's a fact that the country is cutting human rights and basic justice to all individuals being held under security certificate. I'm ashamed of the way that the process has been taken against these individuals, considering the fact that we're supposed to live in a democratic country where we have our Charter of Rights and Freedom. Since September 11, people have been at war on terrorism. People would go through this in Canada. You hear that of other countries, and you feel sad for those people who are going through this situation. But the fact is, a lot of Canadians are still in the dark about what happens in Canada, and that's why it's so important for us to lead a very public battle to say to those people, wake up, man. These things are happening in Canada, and you might be the next person affected, or the person you're married to, or, you know, friends of yours. It impacts so many people, but until it affects you personally, a lot of people are not aware of these situations. I myself was really, really kept in the dark. I just mind my own business, and I didn't care about most of these processes. But to tell you the truth, it has made me a much better person now that I've known that. And I myself have been involved in a lot of other causes, which I have no idea before. So I do get very, very frustrated. I do get extremely mad at my country. Every day I lose more and more faith, and I even have that idea when I meet with politicians that they're not even there to help, really. I mean, I don't believe in politicians anymore. I don't believe in the government. I think that this government is totally corrupted, as well as the CSIS agency, the Secret Services, and RCMP. And I've lost all faith also in RCMP and police officers. I don't look at these people the same way I used to. It's really unfortunate that I had to turn against my government. Some days I wish that I was somewhere else so that my husband would be free. But I'm a Canadian, and my husband came to this country for a better life, and he's fighting much more harder now than he ever was, and so are all these people. And when you come to Canada, it's to have a better life, and this country is there to give you that, but it's not the fact with these people. I myself have been focusing on public events to raise a level of awareness for security certificates, and ask the public and to ask the government to abolish these laws, which allow us to detain people without charge and without access to the evidence. We've done a lot of events here in Ottawa, which do attract media, and I focus a lot on media because as much as media can bring a negative aspect or a positive aspect, we do need them to spread the story around. And by having a communication background, I find that helps me quite a bit to focus on media and ask them to put the story for us and not against us, and do address it to the general public and inform people of what is happening in this country. Now, in terms of family, we've done a few events as a group, and we are a very strong link, I believe. Everybody's working very hard on their own campaign. We're all working from different cities, but I think at the same time, we're all focusing on what the main fact is, that all these individuals need to be released, and that the security certificate and secret trial need to be abolished in Canada. I, for myself, also travel quite a bit. I've dedicated my life now to my husband's case. I have stopped working for a period of time so I can travel and do conferences and work from home. So I've made some very difficult choices in regards to that. But I believe that right now my whole time and energy needs to be focused on my husband, because I do want him back home. And I really do believe in his innocence, and I believe in all these people that are working on this. And the support is out there, but it needs to be stronger. I mean, we remain very positive that one day my husband and myself will be reunited and that we will get justice eventually, but it's just a matter of time, and it's just a matter of getting there. I have to say that my husband is my biggest source of inspiration and motivation. I mean, we're each other's biggest fans, and I don't think I would be able to go through this without my husband being so positive. And basically, he's the same individual he was before he went to jail. He has the same sense of humor and all that, but he's a much stronger individual now, and I feel that from him every day. We just recently went through a very difficult period where we had no legal counsel, and so we fortunately now have a very good lawyer to defend us. But these are all things, we go through things all the time. So you go through ups and downs of emotions constantly, and you have to bring yourself up again and stuff like that. And at the same time, I'd like to thank all those who give me the opportunity to speak about this, and the ones who come to our events, and the ones who do support us by writing to the government and putting pressure. Because without these people, we would not be able to be at the level that we're at right now. I think we've made great, great progress. Before, security certificates were not even on the map. Now it's a serious topic of discussion, and I think a lot more people are aware of it, and I think we can be proud of the work that we've done so far. Just like doing a radio interview with folks like you, it just puts the emphasis on how this subject is important, how people's lives are at risk, and we need to keep reminding ourselves of that.
Folks should look at how can they reach out to those who are being affected, not just the people who are in jail, but to the communities themselves that are being spied upon and infiltrated by CSIS. Looking at things like writing letters to the detainees, writing letters to their MPs, and making this a priority, because all these men are literally death row prisoners at this point. And if they're deported, they will be tortured and murdered. So I think folks really need to look at these as death row cases of people who have been thrown onto death row with no evidence whatsoever. They haven't even had a trial, and treat it with the seriousness that it deserves, you know, and demand that these guys be given justice.
Freedom will come. Welcome, freedom. Justice will come. Welcome, justice. Equality, justice, I want. If we resist injustice, freedom will come. Freedom will come.
Freedom.
Welcome, freedom. Justice will come. Welcome, justice.
Over the last few months, the security certificate process has received a great deal of attention. On October 13th, over 60 legal organizations, including the Canadian Bar Association, wrote an open letter to Anne McClellan, the Minister of Public Safety and Emergency Preparedness, in which they called for a stay to any deportations and a complete overhaul of security certificate legislation. They spoke out against the arbitrary detentions and rendition to torture as fundamentally against human rights and the rule of law. As for the cases, the security certificate against Mohamed Harkat is currently under review in Ottawa. The first hearing of the appeal for Adil Sharkawi's constitutional challenge started on November 8th in federal court. Finally, coming up on December 10th, Human Rights Day, there will be a National Day of Action against secret trials in Canada and in support of the 5 detained men. To get more information or to organize something in your community, you can go to www.adilinfo.org. That's ADILINFO.org. You can also email justiceforadil@riseup.net or call 514-859-9023. This was the second episode of Not So Fundamental Rights, Security Certificates and Secret Trials in Canada. This documentary is a CKUT long-term memory radio production.